Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate
vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. From Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 5, Narada's Teachings to Vasudeva, text number 24. Tritayam Raktavarno So Chatur Bahu Srimekalaha Hiranyaki Shastrayatma Shluk Shruvadyupalakshanaha Tritayam Raktavanosau Chatur Bahus Trimekalaha Hiranyaki Shastrayatma Shruk Shruvadyupalakshanaha Tritayam Raktavanoso Chatur Bahus Trimekalaha Hiranyakeshastrayatma Shruk Shruvadyupalak Upalakshanaha Tritayam. In Trita Yuga Raktavarnaha, red complexioned. Asau, he. Chatubahu, four armed. Trimekalaha, wearing three belts. Representing three phases of Vedic initiation. Hiranyakeshaha, having golden hair. Trayatma, personifying the knowledge of the three Vedas. Shruk Shruvaadi, the sacrificial wooden ladle, spoon, and so on. Upalakshanaha, having as his symbols. In Treta Yuga, the Lord appears with a red complexion. He has four arms, golden hair, and wears a triple belt representing initiation into each of the three Vedas. Embodying the knowledge of worship by sacrificial performance, which is contained in the Rig, Sama, and Yajur Vedas, his symbols are the ladle, spoon, and other implements of sacrifice. Purport. The shruk is a particular implement for pouring ghee in sacrifices. It is about an arm's length long, is made of a particular type of wood called vikankata. The shruk has a rod-like handle and a spout with a shallow groove at its tip that resembles a swan's beak. Its front part is a carved out spoon the size of a fist. The shruva is another implement used in sacrificial oblations. It is made of kadira wood, is smaller than the shruk, and is used to pour ghee into the shruk. It is also sometimes used instead of the shruk to pour ghee directly into the sacrificial fire. These are the Lord's symbols in Treta Yuga when the Lord incarnates to introduce the Yuga Dharma of Jagya or sacrifice. I think we'll read on. This is a the purport's basically echoes the verse. 25. Tam tada manuja devam sarva deva mayam harim yajanti vidyaya traya dharmishtha brahmavadinaha. In Treta Yuga, those members of human society who are fixed in religiosity and are sincerely interested in achieving the absolute truth worship Lord Hari, who contains within himself all the demigods. The Lord is worshipped by the rituals of sacrifice taught in the three Vedas. Purport. The residents of the earth in Satya Yuga are described as having all good qualities. In Treta Yuga, human society is described as dharmishtaha. In the word for word, dharmishtaha means fixed in religiosity or thoroughly religious, and brahmavadina, or faithfully seeking the absolute truth through Vedic injunctions. Dharmishtha brahmavadina. However, it should be noted that all of the exalted qualities of the people of Satya Yuga are not mentioned in this verse. In other words, in Satya Yuga, people are automatically perfect. Whereas in Treta Yuga, people are inclined to become perfect through performing Vedic sacrifice. In Treta Yuga, human society is not automatically Krishna conscious, as it was in Satya Yuga, but people are still highly inclined to become Krishna conscious, and thus they strictly follow the Vedic injunctions. We'll just finish this. This is the text 26 is the final verse in the description of the Lord's appearance in Treta Yuga. Vishnu Yagya Prishni Garbha Sarva Deva Urukramaha Vrishakapir Jayantascha Urugaya Itiryate. In Treta Yuga, the Lord is glorified by the names Vishnu, Jagya, Prishni Garbha, Saravadeva, Urukrama, Vrishakapi, Jayanta, and Urugaya. Purport. Prishni Garbha refers to Krishna's incarnation as the son of Prishni Devi and Prajapati Sutapa. Vrishakapi indicates that if the living entities simply remember the Lord, he is inclined to shower all benedictions upon them, thus satisfying their desires and removing their misery. Since the Lord is always victorious, he is called Jayanta. Jayanta. Om Agyana Timirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmaye Sri Guruve Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Vishtam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kada Mahayam Tadakti Svapadantikam Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langayate Girim Yat Kripa Tamaham Bande Sri Gurum Dinatarinam. So Satya Yuga, was it Kritayam Jayato Vishnum? In the Krita Yuga, or in the Satya Yuga, the process of dharma or religiosity is meditation on the Supreme. Jayato Vishnum. It's to meditate on Lord Vishnu. But it's interesting in this purport, in this second purport that we read, it appears that that's not something that people have to learn. Because it says here anyway, that they're automatically Krishna conscious. They're automatically meditating on the Lord by dint of their good qualities. You know, Krishna mentions in the sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita who the best yogi is. Yogi nam api sarvesham madgatena antaratmana swadavan bhajate yo mam sa me yuktatamo mataha. That the topmost yogi is one who is always thinking within himself or herself of Krishna. So it appears here, at least what's being mentioned here. Satya Yuga means Krita. Kritayam Jhayato Vishnum. People are always automatically meditating on the Lord. Yeah, it says here, it should be noted that all of the exalted qualities of the people of Satya Yuga are not mentioned in this verse. In other words, in Satya Yuga, people are automatically perfect. Prabhupada explains how the universal affairs work in a cyclic fashion, yuga cycles and divya yuga cycles. And Satya Yuga is the beginning of the cycle. And he gives the explanation, it is like a clock. You know, because we don't have these kind of clocks these days, but 100 years ago, or 75 years ago, even probably 50 years ago, you know, the quartz watch hadn't been invented, so you used to have to wind up the clock. And of course, when the clock was fully wound up, then it would run according to time. But as it would wind down and wind down and wind down, then it would get slower and slower until you had to wind it back up again. So similarly also, the movement of time in these yuga cycles begins with Satya Yuga, when, like, the clock is wound up and it's fully running on time, the people are highly qualified. They live for 100,000 years. You can live for 100,000 years if you want to. And the qualities of the people are such that they're, it says here, automatically Krishna conscious. But of course, as time proceeds, just as the clock winds down and loses its potency, so similarly also, as time proceeds, gradually, the quality of people diminishes. And so, in Treta Yuga, it's described that the residents are dharmishta. Dharmishta means they're fixed in religiosity. Brahmavadinaha, they're seekers of the absolute truth. But they're not automatically Krishna conscious. So the inclination is to religiosity, but they're not fully fixed in that madgatena antaratmana, always thinking of the Lord, naturally or automatically, spontaneously, which is the qualification of the residents of Satya Yuga. And so in order to enhance or to support that meditation, then the emphasis is on sacrifice. What is it? Tretayam yajato mukai. The performance of sacrifice is emphasized. And it's interesting, it mentions here, Lord Vishnu, or Jagya, we can assume, wears three belts. That's it. He wears a triple belt representing initiation into each of the three Vedas, Trimekala. Three belts. So the initiation is into the study of the Vedas, the Sama, the Rig, the Sama, and Yajur Vedas. Because by the performance of the different sacrifices that are recommended within the Vedas, people will gradually be elevated. Their consciousness will be elevated. And they'll understand the nature of the Absolute. And that process of sacrifice, basically it's devotional service, will enhance, or it will evoke that Krishna consciousness that's missing, that automatic or that natural, that spontaneous Krishna consciousness that is not fully manifest in the residents of Treta Yuga, because they're very elevated. So in Treta Yuga it is described how personalities will live for 10,000 years. Right? 1,000 years in Dwapara Yuga, and if you're lucky in Kali Yuga you can live for 100 years. You know, if you live for 100 years and you get a letter from the Queen, congratulations. You've been suffering longer than anybody else, practically. So you get an award. So this jagya is Tretayam Yajato Makai Dwapayam Paricharjayam, which is in Dwapara Yuga, then the process of religiosity or of sacrifice, different type of sacrifice, is the worship of the deity. And you can see we still have remnants of these processes even in Krishna consciousness today. We still have those processes. We still engage in those processes. Meditation, you know, we're all meditating. At any time of the day, we're meditating. It's just maybe not meditating on the right things. So meditation is a constant. It's something that we automatically do. And of course, in Kriti Yuga, automatically people are remembering Krishna. That's the purpose. You know, in the Nectar of Devotion, it's described, Prabhupada describes, or Rupa Goswami describes, how basically all of our activities are designed for one purpose. That's to remember Krishna. Not to forget him. Two basic principles of Krishna consciousness, of devotional service, is to always remember Krishna and never forget him. In Kriti Yuga, everybody spontaneously remembers the Lord. In Treta Yuga, sacrifice is performed, and by the performance of that sacrifice and the study of the Vedas, then everybody automatically remembers, everybody comes to the stage of remembering the Lord. In Dwapara Yuga, we worship the deity, and of course, even in the Kali Yuga, even deity worship is very important. In the Kali Yuga, what is it? What's the end of that verse? Dvaparyam Parichajayam Kalo Tadhari Kirtanat Tado Kalo. In the age of Kali, Hari Kirtan is the process by which we can automatically remember the Lord. Hari Kirtan. Still we have deity worship. And we have sacrifice. We have a sacrifice when we, you know, take our initiation vows. We have sacrifices when we go through the different stages of our life. The samskara is recommended. Even the Vedic householders would perform the jagyas in the morning before they would go about doing their activities. Because we don't our jagya actually is to chant Hare Krishna. That's our jagya. Jagyai sankitan praya yajantihi sumedasaha. In the Kali Yuga, the recommended process is demonstrated by the Lord and his associates in the form of the Harinam Sankirtan. So we still see these processes of sacrifice manifest in our practice of devotional service, but the emphasis in Kali Yuga is on the Harinam Sankirtan, or on the Nam Kirtan, or even especially for us on the Japa. Krishna mentions in the Bhagavad Gita, Jagyosmi, Jagyanam Japa Jagyosmi. Jagyanam Japa Jagyosmi. Of sacrifices, I am the chanting of the Japa. So especially in the Kali Yuga, we have the Harinam Kirtan. In fact, the easy part of chanting Hare Krishna is when we get together and chant. That's the easy part of the sacrifice. The more difficult part of the sacrifice, and an integral part of the sacrifice in the Kali Yuga, is to sit down and perform the jagya of just chanting Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. That's the hard part. That's a real sacrifice. You know, there's the story of Prabhupada. Tamal Krishna Maharaj tells the story of Prabhupada chanting Hare Krishna. Then he gets to the end of his 16 rounds and he puts his beads down and he says, "Now I can do any damn thing I like." Got the rounds out of the way. But it's this principle of sacrifice that underlines or underpins all of these Vedic rituals, sacrifices, dharma, if you like, religiosity. Prabhupada mentions in the Bhagavad Gita in the end of the fourth chapter, there are different types of sacrifice. There's sacrifice of possessions, which means, you know, we can sacrifice what we own for various purposes. The real purpose of sacrificing our possessions is to make spiritual advancement. You know, we can sacrifice our possessions in order to get the latest iPod. That's a sacrifice of possessions. Right? You know, we can actually use our possessions to get some material benefit. Even in devotional circles or in devotional activity, a person can be sacrificing their possessions but just doing it for material purposes. You know, like if I shave my head and put on robes and tilak, then everybody will think I'm a saintly person. And then they'll worship me. And they'll give me money. Right? And you see it sometimes in temples. The temple is simply a vehicle or a mechanism for making money. Right? If your temple is very like in Tirupati, Balaji, you know, he attracts the devotion of so many people, and they get crores and crores of rupees coming in. So one can, of course, devotion to Krishna is inspired by pure devotional service of those who are actually worshipping. But you can see how, you know, people with a materialistic kind of a mentality can think, ooh, yeah, not a bad deal. Sit around, do a bit of puja, and collect the money. So sacrifice of possessions can be performed for material benefits. You know, we see it. Sometimes we see it. People come in to the temple and they offer their obeisances to the deities, and then they put their $2 in the donation box. Then they're praying intently. I've sacrificed my $2. Now, Krishna, give me what I want. Give me a million. But that's not the purpose of sacrifice. Certainly not sacrificing our possessions. The purpose of sacrificing our possessions is to engender or to cultivate, to nourish and grow the proper understanding of who I am. And the proper understanding of what my activities are. So Prabhupada mentions, there's this sacrifice of possessions, but then there's the sacrifice, more importantly, of knowledge for the devotees. And this is why, in the fourth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, this is why Krishna recommends that we take shelter of a spiritual master. Tadviti pranipatena pariprasmena sevaya upadekshanti te gyanam gyaninas tatpadasnaha. The idea is to cultivate a knowledge, a proper understanding of who we are. If we have a proper understanding of who we are, then we can meditate on Krishna properly. You know, if we don't know who we are, we don't know what our relationship is with Krishna, then what are we going to be meditating on? More than likely, we'll be meditating on the material benefits that we're going to get from the performance of our activities, rather than the spiritual benefits that is the real or the actual goal of sacrifice. Automatically, material prosperity will come or it will go, because that's the nature of the material world. What is it? Matra spasa stakunteya sitoshna sukha dukkha daya. Heat and cold, happiness and distress. This is just the nature of material existence. So, you know, the performance of sacrifice to gain material benefits is not really intelligent, because the material benefits, just by dint of their very nature, will come and go. So a devotee is not interested in those things, if he's learned. So the sacrifice of knowledge is perfected when one, especially in the Kali Yuga, because, you know, automatically people do not take to religiosity. Only after being encouraged by having the opportunity to perform many pious activities is a person likely to be inclined towards devotional service. And we see it. What are people naturally inclined to in Kali Yuga? Usually, left up to their own devices, what do? Sense gratification, yeah. Sex and drugs and rock and roll. Or whatever it is in the sex and drugs and rap. Things have changed since I was a youth. But if people are given the opportunity by good association, they're engaged in pious activities, and their devotional, their spiritual, natural spiritual inclination or intent can be encouraged. It can be nourished, grown. First of all, the seed has to be planted, but then by good association and by good association being engaged in pious activities. Now, when I say there are different types of pious activities, Prabhupada mentions in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, there is pious activities, just doing good deeds and cultivating knowledge. But when we talk about pious activities, we actually mean bhajana mukhi sakriti. That means pious activities in devotional service, being engaged in activities of devotional service, even unknowingly, it has a great benefit for people. We mentioned this last week. Agyata Sukriti. Most people in the Kali Yuga, well, they're not like the residents of Treta Yuga. Such a yuga automatically pretty much Krishna conscious. In Treta Yuga, there's a diminishing of that good of those good of that natural attraction. But there's still the inclination to perform religious activities. But in Kali Yuga, that inclination pretty much it's pretty much extinguished. And so, the devotees, in recognition of that, go out of their way to create an environment where people are given an opportunity to engage in this bhajana mukhi sukriti, even unknowingly. So chanting Hare Krishna, taking prasadam, taking a book, just even hearing the sound of the holy name. These are pious activities that gradually elevate, they lighten a person of the burden of their impious activities, and they nourish or encourage the inclination towards inquiry, at least. You know, this is the means by which we can determine whether a person is a candidate for devotional service or not, is by listening to them and seeing if they have any inquiry. Right? There's no point in arguing with somebody who's just obstinately determined not to understand things. We actually avoid such people if we can. Argumentative persons, even though they're inquiring, they don't have the submission that's required for understanding. So we go out of our way to create a positive environment, giving people as much opportunity as possible to engage in this agyata sukriti, by which they gradually become purified, and then slowly, slowly, slowly they'll come to the point of inquiry. And then, when they come to the point of inquiry, and really that's the process. Tadvidhi pranipatena pariprashnena. Ask questions. When a person is asking questions with this pranipat mood, right, which means coming with humble, submissive attitude. This is recommended. And not only being humble and submissive, the other test, inquiry is one thing. That's a good start. But then the next test is when, having received proper instructions, whether they will act on it or not. Right? That's sevaya. This is why we put so much emphasis, or Prabhupada put emphasis on service. You know, there's such a thing as lip service. You know what lip service is? Yes. Means you just do service by saying yes, but then don't do anything. That's lip service. Yes, yes, yes. But then, you know, we test people by how they speak, but then we check their mentality. We check the mentality, because you know you can't tell the mentality of a person just by looking at them, unless you're an expert. Maybe the mind, they say that, what is it, the face is the index of the mind. So you know you can tell just basic, you know, he's got a smile on his face, or he's happy, or he's scowling, so he's miserable. But you know, if we really want to test a person, then We listen to what they've got to say, then we check how they behave. And then if there's some incongruity in the behaviour and what they say, then we can understand a person is not, you know, they're crooked, not straightforward. So we see that in Satya Yuga, people are always meditating and acting in devotional service. In Treta Yuga, they're not automatically that elevated, but they have the inclination. And in Kali Yuga, sometimes, you know, they're into it one day, and then the next, they're not. It's difficult to tell, so we have to test. But the devotees are so kind and merciful. They're always creating an opportunity for people to be engaged in devotional activities, even unwillingly or even unknowingly, so that they can gradually be elevated by dint of pious activities, even performed unknowingly. They have potency. So that's our sacrifice. That's the sacrifice of the devotees. And we can see it, you know, I mentioned this last week, but it appears that our observations are correct. You know, we've just had two successful programs, not just here, but also in Sydney and in Brisbane. And we see in the lives of people who ordinarily are not pious. You know, Kali Yuga, Kaliya Dosha Nidhe Rajan, the people of Kali Yuga are basically peppered with faults. Not difficult to find fault in somebody in Kali Yuga, even in the devotees, although it's recommended that we don't do that. And because a devotee is on the path of perfection, if he has, even if they have some fault, if we look at their, we can test the devotees. In fact, Rupa Goswami recommends we do test the devotees. So that we know who's who. There's a Uttama Adhikari. We should know who's an Uttama Adhikari. For such a person we should associate with and serve. But we should also recognize the Kanishta Adhikari. Well, we should recognize the demons. That's handy. And we should recognize the devotees, but amongst the devotees we should recognize who's Uttama and who's Kanishta, who's a beginner. We make friends with the, you know, with those of like mind, the Madhyam Adhikari or the Uttama Adhikari. We serve the Madhyam Adhikari, we make friends with and associate with and serve with also. So the Kali Yuga residents are gradually being purified. We can see that in the performance of our festivals. We see, you know, last night it was interesting to note last night when Maharaj came to give class, that's when the most people got up and walked out. Huh? And I know, about 25 years ago, I remember doing a program in Bendigo with Ramai Swami. And we'd done a lot of advertising and promoting the event and hired a hall. And there was Mangal Maharaj, who was a Gaudiya Vaishnava, who knew Prabhupada and communicated with Prabhupada in the early years, helped Prabhupada as a brahmachari. He came to the program. And I think we got all of about 12 people to the program. Big hall, but 12 people came. And then when Mangal Maharaj started talking, then I think, you know, half of the audience left. So that only left six. And he was a full-on Gaudiya sannyasi, speaking with a very thick Bengali accent. So you could understand why people got up and walked out, because they probably couldn't understand what he was saying, what he was talking about. Because it was Lord Chaitanya's Gopa. He was here. Actually, Indrajuna Maharaj was here at that time. Now I think about it. Because it was Gopurnima, and Mangal Maharaj gave the class. And I remember Indrajuna Maharaj was here, and he thanked him, gave a vote of thanks after Maharaj's class. It was a brilliant class, discussing the pastimes and the appearance of Lord Chaitanya. But it was interesting to compare that with our experience over the last couple of days, over the last few weeks actually in Australia. And it was interesting last night, the people that got up and left, most of them were mums with kids, which was sort of merciful, I guess, in one sense, because, you know, kids are the enemy of the Bhagavatam speaker. Where's Chaitanya? He's gone, huh? He sounded like he was going to kick into gear before, but he didn't. So we can see actually that, you know, how people have somehow or other, it seems that people, at least in Australia, have become, due to the agyata sukriti, it's a sacrifice on our part, or on the devotee's part, on Prabhupada's part, to create an environment where people can inquire about devotional activities, to engage in devotional activities knowingly. That's when the purification starts, to really have an effect, and people start making advancement. In the beginning, it's a slow process. You know, the devotees mentioned to Prabhupada how none of their behaviours showed any, and we could probably, if we look at the qualities of the devotees before they came to devotional service, none of us had any particular, well, maybe present company accepted, but I can at least speak for myself. If you analysed my behaviour before I met the devotees, there was nothing pious in my behaviour or activities. You know, I used to go to church. Maybe that was well, that was odd, actually, I suppose, in one sense. But that was about it. And I stopped that when I was 15. God was too boring. So when the devotees mentioned, you know, our behaviour is not pious. We're not pious. How is it that we've taken to devotional service? And Prabhupada says, you know, I've created your piety for you. So by the preaching, by the book distribution, especially the prasadam distribution, then we see that the audience is now becoming more receptive, more inclined. So that when a sadhu speaks and is delivering transcendental knowledge, people are actually happy to sit and listen. You know, you could tell that people were actually listening to Indrajuna Maharaj's presentation last night, because when he cracked the joke, they started laughing. That's always a test of your audience, to see whether they're with you or not. Right? You crack a joke, and if they don't laugh, not connecting. But people actually listening. That's a very, very positive sign for our preaching. Of course, we have to make sure that our message is suitable for their hearing. This is very important. That Prabhupada, I mentioned this last week. Prabhupada prayed, please let my speaking be suitable for the audience hearing. Obviously, by And so we're mindful. We have to be mindful of how we're presenting ourselves and presenting Krishna consciousness. But we're seeing gradually this principle of jagya is being encouraged. You know, having people sit down, just like we perform the jagya of reciting and hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam every day. That's a sacrifice. Because we're accustomed, the devotees are accustomed to sitting down and just hearing. And in fact, that's the most powerful method for transmitting knowledge. Right? But people aren't used to that. They, you know, if they want to, their methodology for receiving information is different. It's watching the television. Or in this day and age, actually, television is going out of style now. It's now the internet, where you choose what channels you want to plug into. And it's always changing. So people want this, you know, what's happening in society is people are getting addicted to this, always being bombarded with something new. So to sit down and just to hear from a sadhu, saintly person, is quite an austerity. We're practiced, but we see people actually willing to do it. So, you know, last night, maybe 15, 20 people, mums with kids mainly, got up and left. Whereas with Mangal Maharaj, you know, half the audience of 12 left. Like, it was too much. So we're making progress. Which encourages us more to keep, you know, the book distribution, the prasadam distribution, the Harinam, more festivals, so that we can give people an opportunity to engage in these activities of sacrifice that basically help them to cultivate this ability to take to the process of devotional service. Then by taking to the process of devotional service, they can gradually be elevated to the point of always being able to remember Krishna. So it's quite a way. We can see how far away we are from the residents of Treta Yuga. Well, what to speak of the residents of Satya Yuga, who are automatically Krishna conscious. You know, we would just love that. To take birth in Satya Yuga would just be it's impossible. We're in Kali Yuga. But what a distance to go. In Treta Yuga, people enthusiastically, naturally imbibe and accept the processes of jagya, sacrifice. In the Kali Yuga, people unwillingly accept, unless their good fortune can be created for them. So therefore we have to think of ways. Therefore the entertainment program is a way to give people an opportunity to develop that good fortune in the association of the devotees. So it's inspiring to see that gradually people are becoming purified and able to receive that good fortune. I think I might finish here. Does anybody have any comments or questions on any of these points? Yes. Mataji. Automatically thinking of Krishna.
Yeah.
In Treta Yuga, they're automatically religious. But in Satya Yuga, they automatically have achieved the result of religiosity.
So in Satya Yuga, they are automatically religious. But in Kali Yuga, they are mostly irreligious.
Yes.
So, the Satya Yuga comes after the Kali Yuga.
Yes.
So how does it become so automatically religious? Is it because of the mercy of
because Kalki comes along and destroys everybody. And in the process relieves them of all of their sinful their karmas, if you like. And the process just starts again. You know, it's like I mentioned in the beginning, the clock gets wound up. And it's sort of like it's had a spring cleaning and everything is back to new again. Now, how does Krishna do that? I'm not sure. There are a lot of things that Krishna does that we may never know how he actually does it. But that's what happens. Ordinarily, yes, for those living entities, I mean, this is, I'm just painting a picture here just to give you an idea. For those living entities who are killed by the Lord, then they're freed from their sinful reactions, right? Those living entities who are in lower species or whatever, they can take birth as animals and other lower species to burn off their karmas. But for those who have been purified by being relocated by Kalki, they are so purified that they can take birth as humans and or demigods or whatever, and can take off in a very elevated platform, at a very elevated platform. For those who are not elevated, then they can take birth as animals or whatever in the next Satyayuga. Right? Second question. Okay, yeah. Lord Ramchandra. Yes. Well, obviously he's not being described in these verses. Because, yes, but see, there are Yuga avatars, there are Leela avatars, right? So there are different. There is the Guna avatars, right? There's the Mambant avatar. There are many avatars, but in this description of the Bhagavatam, what's being presented are the prominent Yuga avatars who represent the Yuga Dharma. So that doesn't mean that other incarnations didn't appear at that time. They're just not mentioned in this list. Okay? Him.
Didn't the demons that Kalki kills end in personal liberation instead of just having their powers?
They could do. I just gave an example. That was a posit. I'm just saying this is possible. Just as an explanation. But maybe Kalki's more merciful. Yeah.
You mentioned in the beginning that
Whoa, that's a good question. I don't know. Anybody like to comment on that one? I can't say. It says here. Yeah. Satyayuga, everybody is automatically perfect. So what does that mean? Automatically perfect. In Treta Yuga, human society is not automatically Krishna conscious as it was in Satya Yuga. what it says in the purport. So let's assume that Krishna consciousness, you know, Vedanti Tat, what is it? Vedanti Tat Jnanam Vidas, is it?
Vedanti Tat Tattva Vidas.
Tattva Vidas. Yeah. There are three stages of perfection, if you like. There's perfect, more perfect, and most perfect. Right? So we can assume that they more than likely would have been Brahman realized, if not Paramatma realized, and possibly also Bhagavan realized. Jnanam yaj jnanam advayam prameti paramatmeti bhagavaniti samyate. So, yeah, all of the above. Anything else? Yes, Jatinder. Why is there hatred or enviousness amongst devotees? Well, we're conditioned souls, and sometimes we carry a little bit of our conditioning with us. But it's recommended that rather than look at the faulty bits, we should look at the predominance of devotion in a person's character. That's what makes them a devotee. Makes them more of a devotee than a demon. As I mentioned the other day, you know, in the Kali Yuga, the demon and the devotee lives in the same body. Right? We see it. Sometimes devotees have some some fault in their character. But we don't look at the fault. Krishna is adosha dashi, means he doesn't see the faults. He looks at the good qualities. Gunagrahi means he accepts the good of a devotee. And this is why it's recommended that we should see the faults, but at the same time we should recognize the good qualities in others first and foremost. In the ninth chapter, Krishna says, yes, but that's not the bit I wanted to emphasize. Sadureva samantavya samyaghi vyava satohi saha. Sadureva should be seen as a sadhu because they're on the path of perfection. Prabhupada gives the example of the thief who went on pilgrimage but was then one night overwhelmed with the desire to steal something. So he got up and went through his fellow pilgrims' possessions. But then he realized, oh, I'm on pilgrimage. My intention is to become purified of my sinful inclinations. So then he put everything back, or at least as best as he could. When everybody woke up in the morning, there was a disturbance when people found their belongings rearranged. And then he confessed, I'm actually a thief by nature, by occupation. I'm sure that would have thrilled them. But they forgave him anyway because he was honest. So, you know, the devotees may have these some negative characteristics, but we look at the predominance of devotional service. And that's what we emphasize. Because the devotees are on the path of perfection. So if there is some tinge of these qualities, they're usually in a minor manifesta, in a minor degree. Otherwise, if they're in a major degree, then that person is not a devotee, they're a demon. And we avoid them. Right? So the thing is, if we put the spotlight on everybody's bad qualities, then none of us would be here. Right? I certainly wouldn't be here. And you probably neither. So we don't put the emphasis on the negative, we put the emphasis on the positive that a person does, and we learn to tolerate whatever discrepancies there might be. Minor discrepancy. If it's a major discrepancy, then, you know, we'll sort it out. Right? Somebody, you have to sort out some of the, sometimes the major discrepancies. But even that's for our purification. So, you know, why is there some form of contamination in Kali Yuga? You tell me. Because it's the nature of the age. Kaliar dosar nide rajan. It's an ocean of faults. But one good quality. Kirtanad eva krishnasya mukta sangha parambrajet. So therefore Haridas Thakur says that person who's always chanting Hare Krishna, he's a sadhu. He's a saintly person. That's the person that we want to associate with. Even if there may be some tinge, some minor faults. That the fact that they're chanting Hare Krishna and following the path of perfection means that they'll be perfect. They'll become perfect in due course of time. Why are they taking birth?
Yeah.
Obviously not completely perfect. Some material desires still exist. Or their paramahamsas come to benefit everybody else. But even the demigods, for example, who are considered to be in a mode of goodness and who are associates of the Lord or servants of the Lord, the devas are understood to be pious and advanced personalities, but they still have some desire to exercise, and so they get that opportunity by being powerful, influential, worshipable even. In the material realm, right? So that, you know, these are subtle contaminations, not gross contaminations, but subtle contaminations that mean they have to take birth again, even as residents of such a yuga, which means you live for 100,000 years and you're very elevated. And you know, we can see in the Bhagavatam, it's interesting. You see, in the Bhagavatam, there are stories where personalities perform sacrifice and pious activities and actually get to see Lord Vishnu, but then pray for some material benediction. Not a lot of them. And certainly the Bhagavatam doesn't emphasize that, but there's one personality, and I've forgotten whose name it is, but sixth canto of the Bhagavatam. Was it Maharaj Chitraketu? I can't remember. Huh? Anyway, you know,
he was given benediction to have pious life.
Yeah, given a benediction to have a pious life.
It wasn't like a direct desire of him.
Daksha. Was it Daksha who saw Lord Vishnu? Yeah? Yeah, that's right. It's a good example. Daksha is a good example. Pious enough, I mean, that's quite, you know, he got to see Lord Vishnu, but then he asked for some material benedictions. So, you know, we can understand that not everybody who's a resident of such a yuga necessarily is a pure devotee. That's a bit different. They are elevated and advanced enough to be able to realize the Lord, but still have some material desires, and so remain in the material world. Hard to conceive of. Right, I think we should finish here. Kantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.